You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Move the Sticks. DJ Bucky back with you. And Buck, it's been a, crazy, wild, insane 24 hours yesterday. How are you doing, man?
DJ, I'm good. But I think you and I will kind of agree on this. With Pete Carroll and then Nick Saban, kind of being bounced or removed or retiring or whatever we want to call it, and the same day, it is crazy because it kind of played on the old scout in me, like going to SC, seeing Pete Carroll and those things, going to Alabama, seeing Nick Saban and the machine, talking about, hey man, 3-day visits at those schools because of the number of prospects that they have. To see both of those guys kind of, I won't say they're retired because Pete Carroll, maybe he still wants to coach, but two polar opposite approaches having remarkable success. Yeah. When you think about Nick Saban, old school, grinded out, disciplined, detailed, and those things, you think about Pete Carroll. He had the discipline and the detail, but it was fun-loving. It was electric. It was different. To me, I just remember looking at both of those programs fondly, saying, oh, you can skin the cat multiple ways. Because both guys had a lot of success, particularly at the collegiate level, doing it drastically different for their programs that were powerhouses.
Yeah, and look, Bill Belichick, and then that gets announced the next morning, which is this morning as we're recording this, that's it for him. And really, you can connect all three of these guys. This really, really connected. When you think about Belichick following Pete Carroll, you think about Pete Carroll and, you know, kind of who he learned under and then who he mentored. I mean, who coached under Pete Carroll? Sark and Lane. Who needed to revitalize their offense at Alabama as the RPO game got introduced. And it was like, okay, let me go get these younger guys have kind of on the cutting edge a little bit, rehabbed both of them, got them both head coaching jobs out from under him. But to me, I think when you look at all three of them, and we'll go into case by case, but like if we're going to talk about stuff that these guys all have in common, because no more different personalities than the three of them, if you put Belichick in here with these guys. But think about this when you're getting ready to hire a coach. Buck, I feel like all three of these guys, like if you think about when you're in high school, forget coaches. Like think about your teachers. Like didn't we all had a teacher like each of these guys? And you could say they're all great teachers and there's different ways to teach. But at the end of the day, they are able to impart knowledge on people and able to get them to execute. That's what these guys are. They're all three of them are great teachers.
Yeah, DJ, I don't know if you're like this, man, but when I see any of the three aforementioned guys talk about football on TV, I kind of perk up and pay attention. You know, like Nick Saban over the last year, and you could probably tell he was his swan song because I feel like all of us want to leave the game in a better place. And so when you're nearing the end, you begin to share more. And I feel like he shared more of philosophy, approach, how do you deal with football and all that other stuff. I feel like he's become kind of professor teaching all of us about the game. And then when you think about Bill Belichick, if you ask him the right question, he will give those answers in a presser.
About long really snappers.
Yeah, where he really educates you on the game, but you have to know what to ask. And Pete Carroll has always kind of been open about sharing philosophies and approaches and those things. You are right, though, about feeling like they were like the high school teacher. You're around the Chargers all the time. I'm around the Jaguars. And I tell people all the time, like, pro ball is no different really than high school. You're just dealing with older guys who have money. But the same lessons that are conveyed in a high school locker room on a high school field are also uttered in a pro locker room. And those guys, we talk about Saban and Carroll and Bill Belichick, I think they took a high school approach to the upper levels in terms of the way they clearly outlined what the expectations are. They were very clear in terms of like the techniques that they taught and the schemes and how they explain to the players. And I think what people should do is, while we're talking about their age and that stuff, I think we should understand the mastery of teaching and leading that they provided all of us. And whoever follows those guys in terms of like the plans that they laid out, they're going to end up being great coaches if they're able to take the lessons that they've shared with us on how to lead, how to build a team, how to handle all these different situations. I mean, because every time you hear them talk, man, it's a masterclass in building a championship team.
So I want to go through each of these one by one, and that was well said there. But I mean, when you look at Pete and you look at what's next for them, DQ, Dan Quinn's the name that keeps popping up. But I'm always fascinated, you know, John Schneider's done a wonderful job there as GM, been there for a long time, and you know him going back, way back. But there's the decision to be made. Do we keep it in the family, or do we want something new, different? Do we want to bring in a different voice and philosophy and see if we can adapt and grow on top of what we're already doing? I think that's going to be a fascinating decision there for John.
I think it's hard to do it the same, because no matter what, even if you bring in a Dan Quinn, it can be similar to Pete's thing, but it can't be Pete's thing. Like, you can't replicate what Pete was doing. And so you are right about having to do it. I'll relate it to, look, I went to Carolina. Carolina basketball was everything to me. Dean Smith retires, Avery Guthridge and all those guys. And for so long, it was about keeping in the family and those things. But man, it's hard. It's hard when you're stepping in and replacing the legend. You kind of want to have your own identity within whatever the culture that's already been established. Like, there's some things that we say are must-haves. Like, from must-have culturally, there's some things that you keep in place. But then the new coach also has to be able to bring his own stuff to the mix. And if you're John Schneider, not only the time that you've had with Pete Carroll, but you got to remember, John Schneider spent a lot of time in Green Bay. And in Green Bay, he was with Ron Wolf. And he saw, like, Mike Holmgren and those guys win a championship. So I'm sure he has his own thoughts on how it can be cultivated and developed and those things. So maybe it's not a lock that it's going to be inside the family. Maybe it is someone who can take a little bit of what Pete has done and kind of expand it and make it even greater.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of leaning that way. And I love DQ. And I think DQ will be a great fit for a number of these jobs. And I think he'll do a great job. For me, I feel like you're kind of bringing in someone so similar to what you just had, where I think it's almost better to say, you know, maybe we'll go on the offensive side of the ball and try and get a new identity, get some new ideas, some new thoughts, you know, just a newness to it, a freshness to it. It almost feels to me like that would be a better path for them to go. If you're looking to grow, you're not looking to maintain, because right where they are right now is not where they want to be. They want to grow. So how do you grow if you're doing the same exact things? I think there's a case to be made of, we're going to try and bring in somebody on maybe on the other side of the ball and then try and get some new ideas, a fresh approach here.
Okay, so what's interesting, right? So one of the names that people have brought up is not only Dan Quinn, but they brought up Drew Canales based on the success that he had down in Tampa with Baker Mayfield, the fact that he had been in Seattle for years under Pete, got bypassed for the offensive coordinator job, stayed as a quarterback coach, offensive assistant, and elevates in Tampa. You talk about offense, fresh approach, year away in Tampa, seeing it differently. Could he take what he really liked about Pete Carroll's stuff, but then some of his own ideas that maybe he's learned from his time at Tampa, or just his own perspective on how he would do things differently? It would give you, and you've always been an advocate of, like, man, when the head coach knows the quarterback, like, you have an opportunity to maybe have some continuity when it comes to systems, because offensive coordinators may come and go, but the head coach, if it's his stuff, the program never changes. So maybe given that, given his success with Geno, maybe he is able to come in there and kind of get it going. And so you have a younger perspective that might resonate better with the locker room, because there were some things that you heard about, like maybe Pete had kind of, I don't say detached from the locker room, but maybe there were some things. But maybe a young guy who is not necessarily on the radar, but has ties to the program, comes back and kind of takes it to another level, because he hasn't always been in Seattle.
Yeah, it's a tough one, man, because I do think having a working knowledge of who the guy is and having been with him before, I think you understand how that dynamic could work, in terms of bringing a head coach who's been in your building before. I don't know, man. I go both ways on that. I could be convinced, I guess, of guys who have ties there, who have been there before. But I also just think, man, you're in a division with San Francisco. Brock Purdy is young. Kyle Shanahan's not going anywhere. They are going to be a nightmare to deal with. So I almost am like, you're at a pickup game and it's like, okay, we lost. Okay, well, here's our same five. We keep the same five out there and we go back at them again. At some point in time, you got to be like, man, we got to get somebody else in here, because I don't think our five's good enough. And I think just players. I think that's on the coaching side of things. Try and get something more. They need more.
Okay, so let's talk about the coaches that are in that division. So it's Kyle Shanahan and Sean McVay, two of the best coaches that we can admit in the game right now. Quarterback Matthew Stafford, how much longer he plays, we don't know. Brock Purdy's going to be there for a minute. Then you go down to Arizona. Jonathan Gannon, to me, has been surprisingly impressive as a head coach.
Did a good job.
Got more out of the Cardinals than I think anybody could have imagined. And it's not necessarily the wins and losses, it's how they played. I think they played with great effort. And so now you have a young quarterback in Kyler Murray, and it appears that they are locked in with him. So now the arms race in that division, better get you a quarterback, or you better have a way to make your quarterback position play at a higher level. And so that speaks to some of the stuff that you have. So then some of the names that would naturally pop up, like, hey, would Ben Johnson be a fit there? Could he take what he learned from Detroit, add to it, enhance it, benefit from an experienced general manager who has built championship caliber teams? Would he benefit from that? Because the thing that I will always worry about with a first-time head coach, I think the people dealing with the personnel need to be experienced. I think it's a lot to have a lot of newbies everywhere. I know Houston's doing it on the field, head coach, offensive coordinator, quarterback. I still feel like there needs to be like the wise elder in the room. Hey, let's build the team this way. Yeah, we coach it and those things. So I don't know. Who are some other names that you think maybe could fit in Seattle?
I'm looking this up here real quick. This is an article. Got to find the numbers here. Okay. I believe this is correct now. If I've updated, this article was out in October. Okay. So Jim Schwartz with the Cleveland Browns. We were talking about him a little bit before we came on air. As a defense coordinator, obviously as a former head coach. I believe he is 9-1 against Kyle Shanahan.
Oh.
I mean, who has that type of success when they've lined up as coordinators, which Kyle Shanahan calling plays on offense and Jim Schwartz calling plays on defense? So much so, if you look at the 49ers defense they run, it's Jim Schwartz's defense. I mean, Chris Kocurek, the D-line coach there, got his first job underneath Jim Schwartz. They play that jet front, that attacking front that they play. There's a lot of carryover from what Jim Schwartz did defensively to what Kyle Shanahan has instituted there in San Francisco. I haven't seen his name mentioned with any interviews. I haven't heard anything there. But if I'm in that division and I'm Seattle and I'm going, okay, previous head coaching experience, I think he's in his mid to late 50s. He took over an 0-16 team there with the Lions and ended up getting them into the playoffs. If you take out his first year there where they were terrible, I think he was probably a 500 coach with Detroit. Has since won a Super Bowl in Philly. He's got Cleveland right now with the number one defense in the NFL. And he's had success against Kyle Shanahan. I'd sure as heck bring him in to talk to him if I was Seattle.
Why not? We always talk about that. And it has been funny that he hasn't been mentioned, because at a time where we're talking about guys getting second opportunities. So the names mentioned have been Dan Quinn. Raheem Morris has been mentioned as a guy possibly getting a second opportunity to be a head coach. Jim Schwartz has not done it. You think about the circumstances that he stepped into in Detroit. I think he took over the team when they were coming off an 0-16.
They were
0-16 season. Eventually got them to the point where they got to the playoffs. He dealt with a number one overall pick in Matthew Stafford, kind of nurtured him along the way. And then you have seen, since he was dismissed in Detroit, he's kind of bounced around, but he's been a successful defensive coordinator for a Super Bowl winner in Philadelphia. You're looking at the Cleveland Browns right now, who have played with four different quarterbacks, but yet they're in the postseason with an 11-win record. And they have the number one defense, so they didn't make any excuses for what the offense is doing. To me, in these situations, when you're building and you're thinking about, do I have a guy in a leadership role that can handle adversity? Does he have a track record of being able to handle adversity? We now talk about quarterback development. Does he have a track record of dealing with young quarterbacks and building a team around young quarterbacks? He's done that. So there are certainly a lot of positive attributes that Jim Schwartz would bring as a head coach, despite him seemingly flying up under the radar.
I haven't seen his name mentioned as getting any of these interviews. So it's just kind of interesting. I just think of all the different openings, you could make a strong case that Seattle would be the one that should probably be interested there. If nothing else, I'd want to pick his brain about just what the heck he's done against Kyle Shanahan and the success that he's had against him. That would be something I'd be curious about.
Yeah, and I think some of these head coaching interviews should be fact-finding missions. Yeah. Whether you're seriously considering the candidate or not, I want to know what others think about my franchise, my team, my quarterback, those things. I want to pick the brain on the division, and maybe I can glean a little insight from them on, okay, here's maybe how I need to approach some of the other stuff that we're trying to get done in building a championship team. So Jim Schwartz and some of these other guys should have an opportunity to interview either Zoom or in person, to be able to have that exchange of ideas to see if they would be good fits.
Question for you. We've got the Browns and the Texans. The Jim Schwartz will be calling the defense for the Cleveland Browns. Who's the offensive coordinator for the Houston Texans? Bobby Sloak. Where'd he come from? What tree is he underneath, Buck?
Oh, San Francisco. Kyle Shanahan.
This would be my closing argument here of, hey, Seattle, this is the offense you guys see. Watch what I'm getting ready to do against them. I don't know how it'll go. But, I mean, that would be my... that'd be my motivation if I was him. Be like, hey.
I mean, look, it is one that is quite interesting when you think about it. Like, everyone will have an opportunity to tune in the postseason. So some of the names that we talked about as candidates, look, your performance is your resume. Mm-hmm. And so now the football world will have an opportunity to see you on a big stage. There are no other games to distract us from not being able to watch your game from beginning to end. Mm-hmm. Gear up. Show up your best stuff. Don't be distracted by it all. But yeah, a lot of people, this is a resume builder for sure.
No question. All right, let's take a quick break. We come back. We'll talk about those other two with Bill Belichick as well as Nick Saban. Jump into that right after this. You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game, King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think you could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, love he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on
I'm
top
not
of it.
Like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came out from crying tears. Crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because he didn't need it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
All right, Buck, it was an unbelievable run with Belichick. And I think I've said it on here with you before. I know we've talked about it off camera, and I believe we've even talked about it on the pod, which was, I thought this was going to be it after having visited New England with the Chargers and seeing it was bad weather. You know, it wasn't a great day to go out to a ball game, but stadium wasn't full. They didn't score a point. It was lifeless in there. It was a rough watch. Bill Belichick is going to go down as the greatest coach of all time, arguably. What he's accomplished in this competitive atmosphere that he's been in, that he's coached in, to have the success he's had is going to, I don't know, we'll ever see anything like it again. So his place in history is very secure, but it felt like this was time. It was time for New England to get a fresh approach, more than likely going to be accompanied by a new quarterback, a new coach, and become a more watchable product than they've been the last couple years. So I understood it. I thought it would happen. Here we are. The question is, where would you go in terms of how you follow up Bill Belichick and what you're looking for?
Look, man, it's kind of similar to the same conversation we had about following up Pete Carroll. The difference is Pete Carroll had one ring, one Super Bowl title. Bill Belichick has six. The standard for Boston fans is, look, it's going to be crazy high because, like, when you think about the culture in Boston, like, there was a 20-year run where they not only won with the Patriots, the Celtics won, the Bruins won, the Red Sox won. I mean, it was just like Ring City. And so this team will always, you know, kind of remain dear to the fan base because they expect to win. And when you win six in a 20-plus year period, it's hard to do it. What I think is it's hard to look. It's hard to replicate what Bill Belichick did. It's hard to do the do your job thing. It's going to be hard to do the team thing and the quiet and not share and open up with the media. But it's also going to be hard to duplicate the success that he had on the field for such a long time. I know people would talk about Mike Vrabel. He certainly
should
be.
That's all they're talking about. That's all they're talking about. But it's the same discussion we just had, right? Do you want to keep it in the family or do you want to branch out?
And then they also talk about Gerard Mayo because it seemed like there may have been like a little handshake, nod, wink agreement because he pulled out of head coaching things or whatever. But I don't know, man. Like, this is a tough one and it's a big job. I mean, it's a big job to fill because everyone that was poo-pooing on Bill Belichick over the past year or two, next year, he's going to be the greatest thing that they ever remember. And that new coach has to stand up in that and deal with all the pressure that comes with that. Not an easy job and not an easy fix because they don't have a quarterback.
My question is, if you looked around the league, is there a team, like in baseball, the Chicago Cubs had a good manager who was popular there. That they ended up firing because Craig Counsell was available and they felt like, hey, if we have a chance, if this is a game about margins and we have a good one and we got a chance to get a great one, much as we love the good one's got to go and we're going to go after the great one. Like, people are talking about Bill Belichick and what's next for him. I see Atlanta is one that's often mentioned as a potential landing spot. But I almost wonder, I don't know who that team is. You can say the Cowboys, the success they've had. If one of these teams that's ready to go right now, gets bounced early in the postseason, does an owner sit there and say, man, we are on the cusp of a championship and I have a good coach. Do I swap out and try and bring in Belichick and see if I can't get a ring here in the next couple of years?
I wonder about that. And then I also wonder if age will be used against them. 71 years old, how long can someone, can you expect someone to reasonably coach? But I'll say this, look, man, he's as sharp as they come. That defense played really well. In spite of him, if they had an offense that would give them anything, they would have won a ton of games because they lost a bunch of one-score games last season. DJ, it's tough. I think for him, for Belichick, Atlanta would be interesting. They've dealt with the New England thing kind of when Thomas Dimitroff and Pioli and all those guys were there. It might not have been as full-fledged New England, but they've dealt with that model a little bit. The Washington Commanders, to me, would be interesting because, look, man, he's a historian. And he remembers when that franchise was everything. Like, that's one of the blue blood franchises in the National Football League. They just fall on hard times for so long that we don't remember. DJ, they would offer him an opportunity really to set and establish the culture from top to bottom. If you're Josh Harris, you ask him to bring somebody else in to handle the personnel and to get it right. To me, that is a team that needs what he offers in terms of the discipline, the detail, the learning how to win. He provides that. I would think the Commanders would be a unique situation to be able to do it. And you have to look at the rest of the division. The Giants are down. The Eagles
have come back to earth. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you have the Cowboys. Man, when you think about like a worst to first or a quick turnaround, perhaps you have some stuff in place where you can turn that thing around quickly in Washington.
Yeah, no, it's going to be interesting to see what he does. I selfishly hope that he coaches again, you know, and gets a chance to go hunt one down. I think it would be pretty cool if he were able to go get one without Tom after Tom went out and got one without him. He didn't have he was in charge of the roster, so he owns some of the blame there, if not most of the blame. Offensively, they just didn't have the people there to compete at that type of a level. So maybe he identifies a place that has the offense in place and goes, hey, I'll come in here and fix the defense, and I can go win my ring without Tom after he won one without me.
Yeah, no, look, he has to be looking at that, and the competitor in him has to want to go and win all over again and show people. Like, when you're a great player, you're a great coach, you always want to remind people of your greatness. We talk about Saban. I think Saban's last season really reminded us of his greatness. Even though they fell short of winning the title, the fact that they took Michigan to overtime, they knocked off Georgia, and you could reasonably say, man, if Alabama gets to the championship game, does he win another one?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, so I do wonder if Belichick kind of gets his comeuppance by going somewhere and leading. It makes the Chargers an attractive thing because quarterback is there.
Pieces the offense are there. Should be ready to go. Yeah. You got to figure out the salary cap stuff, but they're positioned in the draft, they can solve some problems.
Older players in place, because you know, older players, high IQ defense. Can you imagine what he could do? And I know people have talked about Derwin not being what he was. Cool. I saw him take Rodney Harrison and do a lot of fun things, and everybody thought Rodney Harrison was done too. You know, like he's done a lot of stuff with guys that they felt like were declining. It would be interesting. Obviously, the money would be a point. And how much control do you want to necessarily relent to someone who would seemingly want to have all the power, even though I don't know how much that is really true.
Yeah, no, it's interesting, man. It absolutely is interesting. All right, the last one of the trio here, Nick Saban. He decides to retire. We had talked about this before. I thought this was coming. This rumor had been out there for a while. I mean, the greatest college coach that we've seen during our lifetime. I don't think that's even debatable with what he's done. My question is, and it looks like Dan Lanning, as we're recording this, has announced he's staying at Oregon. So as we're recording this, we don't know who it is. Maybe while you're listening to it, it's already been announced. I don't think it'll take long. But golly, you got to pay me a ton of money to come in there and follow Nick Saban, man. You want to be the guy who follows the guy, not the guy who follows. You want to be the guy who follows the guy who followed the guy.
No, thank you on the Alabama thing. It's like all those guys that followed behind Bear Bryant when he left, and it wasn't until Gene Stallings took over that they were able to go back and win a national title and those things. And then think about when Gene Stallings left, how they had to cycle it over a few different times before they were able to get Nick Saban. Nah, it's a difficult job. And now that the expectation, DJ, with Saban and with Belichick, man, they put the bar so high because you're not supposed to win 6 national titles in a 17-year span. But because you're Alabama, like I saw the stat where they said none of his recruiting classes that were there for 4 years walked out without a national championship ring.
I think this is the first one, right? This is I know, like I saw something the other day, like Terrion Arnold, who came out, and I think maybe he was just because he was just there for 3 years, but he, you know, I might even have been even 3 years. Like, so they didn't win one this year. This group of three-year guys didn't win one, which is the first time, I think, during Saban's time. It's crazy.
Which is unbelievable. And so that's what you're chasing. And so to follow that up and to do that, that's I am not envious of whoever takes that job, but it should be one that, look, it's a coveted job. He set it up with all the resources and all the other stuff. They have everything. Alabama is a brand name. They can recruit. And when Alabama calls, you're going to pick up the phone. It's a big hire. The thing about it, DJ, all of the assistants that have left and are well-positioned, man, like, you know, Kirby, you're not going to leave. I didn't think Dan Lanning would leave Oregon to go because you're already established. Man, I don't know. Like, I don't know who could – you talk about inside or outside the family. Man, who can you bring for that job? It has to be someone – who has just an unbelievable amount of confidence, an unbelievable track record, and they're ready to deal with all the slings and arrows that come with taking that job after the man who has a statue in front of the thing.
Yeah.
He has a statue. Him and Bear Bryant. So that's who you're competing with. At Alabama, you're competing not only with Nick Saban, but Nick Saban and Bear Bryant. Those are the standard bearers for the program. Yeah, man, I passed that to somebody else.
I was talking to a coach's agent, so he represents coaches, and he said, you know, we'll see. Everybody anticipates, as I think we both do, that Harbaugh is going to leave. So you'll have Harbaugh leave, Nick's going to leave. His prediction was that unless things get changed with the portal, NIL is one thing and all that, but really the portal more than anything else has become exhaustive for these coaches. And every time I talk about this, people go, oh, they get paid so much money, you know, stop complaining. No. What coaching was previously, where in college, you know, you got a little bit of downtime in the summer. You know, you did a couple camps, but you got a little bit of a break, and you got some family time. You know, you can actually have a little bit of balance. And it was okay if I just recruit really hard, and then I coach really hard. Those are two full time jobs, but I can do that. I'm comfortable with that. You get well compensated. But now you're having to basically defend your turf constantly. With your own roster getting raided while also keeping tabs on everybody else's roster and how you can upgrade your team. And it's basically nonstop. It is year round. Mm-hmm. It never relents. And so what this agent was telling me was you're going to see coaches that hit like 48, 50 years old at the top of their game say, I've got enough money. I'm out. This is not worth it anymore. I'll take my money and go have some semblance of a life. Or you're going to see the better coaches that have opportunities to go to the NFL that say, I'm not, the NFL is going to become more attractive than it's ever been. Whereas I think in the previous, if you went back 5 years ago, you could make the case the college, one of the blue blood coaching jobs in college is better than an NFL job because you have all the control, all the power. You get paid handsomely, then you have more security. I don't think that's the case anymore.
It's not the case. It's a 24/7, 365. And I remember Saban talking about just the challenge of this season being in the middle of the college football playoff preparations by having to deal with the signing date in the middle of all of it. So you're not only preparing for one of the biggest games that you can have in your coaching career, you're also chasing a bunch of 17 and 18 year olds trying to make sure that you can entice them to come to your school. It's never ending. And then not only are you dealing with that, you're having these kind of exit meetings with guys who are considering jumping in the portal and what's my future like and all of that. Man, it's nonstop. DJ, it's nonstop. And you're just looking at the way teams are being constructed at the collegiate level with transfers and all this other stuff is just such a transient thing. In essence, what you're doing in college is you're playing NFL football with younger kids. Yeah. And it's a lot to control.
But here's the pushback I got from somebody on that topic was he's like, this person had coached in college and in the NFL. And he said, everybody's saying the college game's like the NFL. You guys have free agency now. He's like, no, in the NFL, if I sign a guy to a 3-year contract, 4-year contract, he can't leave. In college, you could have an NIL agreement with somebody for, you know, 3-4 years. 2 weeks later, they can walk in your office and say, I want another $400,000 or I'm going to go to another program that's willing to give it to me. Like, they're not bound to anything. So it's much worse than coaching in the NFL and dealing with free agency. This is free agency where they're not bound to the contract. Like, it's insane.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it is insane. When you hear the money that is thrown around and you know, people, you know, we talk about people like the constant negotiations that go on when it comes to the NIL stuff. It's bananas, man. I don't know how anybody can do it. Like, it's just a lot to manage. And you're trying to do it in a team sport where you also are trying to educate guys. You want guys to graduate and all that. It's a mess right now. And coaches are pulled in so many different directions. And I know, say, hey, man, they're making $10 million. Don't feel sorry for them. I just don't know how you sustain success in the current model that we have. It's just a lot of stress and a lot of pressure to be able to get it done. Because the other part that happens is when boosters are involved more than they've been in before, because now they're involved with their checkbook.
Yeah.
Well, the expectations are different. So now it's not only, hey, I need to go talk to the AD. I have to now go talk to the boosters because I'm asking them for this money. And I got to justify why we're only 8-5 after spending gobs of money on all these NIL deals. A lot to deal with if you're a coach.
Man, no, it's fascinating times, man, in football. That being said, we're coming off of a great playoff where, man, I enjoyed watching those games. And I'm excited to see the 12-team playoff. I think college football is healthy from that standpoint, no doubt. I just think, you know, we're talking about coaches specifically. I think we'll see the impact of this over the next few years, unless something gets changed. So we'll have to wait and see. Anything else you want to get to before we get out of here, Buck? Busy day.
Busy day, man. Like, look, I just want to make sure we give each of those coaches their flowers. Bill Belichick, Nick Saban, Pete Carroll changed the game in so many different ways. There's a legion of coaches that look up to those guys and have followed some of the lessons that these guys have kind of taught the coaching community. And I think, look, I'm going to be sad to see some of these guys not on the sidelines again. Hopefully, in the case of Bill Belichick and maybe Pete Carroll, maybe to get one more bite at the apple. More bite at the apple. Because Pete Carroll didn't sound like he was ready to go away.
No.
He was going kicking and screaming.
He said he fought for that job. He fought to keep that job. We'll see. We'll see where they land. But you're right. Unbelievably accomplished individuals who've left a lasting legacy on this sport, no doubt. All right, that's going to do it for us today. We'll be back tomorrow with one more episode where we will preview the upcoming playoff game. So be on the lookout for that. Until then, hope you have a wonderful, wonderful day. And we'll see you tomorrow right here on Move the Sticks. You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful. Listen to A Really Good Cry on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.